Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, April 3rd, 2026. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Education, Students Chart Their Future. Decatur schools celebrate College and Career Week. Barbie Stanley is debating two career paths. She's attracted to nursing, but also to mechanical engineering, which she laughingly admits are completely different. "I've always been interested in health and working with people," she said of nursing, "but her dad is an engineer, and that appeals to her for that reason." She's also looking for a job, and one of the tables at Kroger, which is near her home, would be convenient if she lands a job there. This is College and Career Week in Decatur Public Schools, and one feature of the week is the College and Career Fair, one held at each of Decatur's high schools to allow students to talk to college representatives and to explore part and full-time jobs for summer and beyond. Barbie, a sophomore at Eisenhower High School with her friend Ella Walton, was most interested in the college tables, and both girls are leaning toward the University of Illinois. Ella, also a sophomore, is interested in going into sports medicine for a career and also wants to play volleyball or cheerleading in college. She already has a job, so that wasn't as important to her. "U of I has been on my radar for a long time now," she said. "I'm just looking around for my options close to home because I don't want to go far. I like to keep my family around," she said. "We've been doing job expos for years through innovative programs, just trying to bring our employers into the buildings to give our students opportunities to apply for part-time or full-time jobs," said Ashley Grained, Executive Director of Strategic Planning and Innovative Programs for Decatur Schools. "We have specifically hosted during College and Career Week as one of the high school pieces to that enrichment week," she said. This year, there are 24 vendors that included both colleges and local businesses and organizations seeking teens to fill job openings. Sophomores, juniors, and seniors are invited to attend the job fair because most jobs require a minimum age of 16. "We're just trying to mix it up due to feedback from students that we're hearing and give our students opportunities to come with resumes and just talk to the businesses," Grained said. And in recent years, Decatur Schools has put an increasing emphasis on college and career, not just college as a goal, with options for students to consider the trades and other paths as well. Memorial Health also has opportunities for teens if they are at least 18, said Rob Saunders, recruiter. "And one program has a full-time job in summer that can become a part-time or on-call kind of job during the school year for students. The PRN program employs them on as-needed basis. They have to work two shifts a month to be considered employees, so it's flexible." Kroger has a variety of jobs and schedules available for teens, said Danielle Montgomery, District Human Resources Lead for the company. "With three locations in Decatur, almost all high school students will have one in their part of the town, as Barbie mentioned. If they're interested in saving for college, there's tuition reimbursement through the company," Montgomery said. "There's different avenues to advance your career, department leaders, management, things like that. So really, whatever they're interested in, and some of them are looking for a first job." And the photo here on A2 shows freshman Kenneth Lee handles an example of a valve from Mueller Company during the Decatur Public Schools College and Career Week at Eisenhower High School on Tuesday, March 31st. And the young Kenneth Lee is holding this valve in his hand, and it looks like he's asking questions of the person from Mueller Company. And there are tables in the background and other people showing what they have to offer. And on the front page, there's a photo of juniors Brianna Stewart and Charlie Dates, visiting the Prairie Land Federation for Advanced Manufacturing Education booth during the Decatur Public Schools College and Career Week Fair at Eisenhower High School on Tuesday, March 31st. And this is the big color photo with three young women standing there holding different folders and papers with information and talking to a person sitting behind the table. It looks like there's a bowl of candy to entice them and some other information spread out on the table. It looks like it's taking place in the gym at Eisenhower High School. And also locally on the front page, Macon County elections, Root wins sheriff primary. He's likely to keep job as Dems filed no challenger. Macon County Sheriff Jim Root retained custody of his job in the March Republican primary election with a comfortable margin of victory. Root polled 4,682 votes compared to his subordinate and challenger, Deputy Shane Beck, who polled at 3,192, and with no Democratic challenger in sight, the electoral question of who gets to be sheriff appears to be over. Those results saw Route 57 cruise past the finish line with a winning margin of more than 46%, a healthy win. But Beck's results have to be seen through the light of a major handicap. A mistake in his nominating petitions saw his name struck from the ballot after the error was highlighted by supporters of Root. So Beck, 52, had to campaign as a write-in candidate, and no write-in challenger has ever prevailed in a contested Macon County election. Viewed in that light, his vote tally was more notable. "I've never seen so many write-ins votes before," Macon County Clerk Josh Tanner told the Herald and Review after officially certifying the primary results Wednesday. The number of votes his opponent received caught the sheriff's attention, too. "I was just surprised at the number of write-in ballots that he was able to obtain," Root said. "I mean, it was an effective campaign on his part for getting his message out there to write in his name, and that his vote tally, that's a pretty good number." There can only be one winner, however, and the sheriff was also pleased. His faith in his own reelection victory proved justified. "I was just sure I was going to get a win out of this election," he added. The incumbent and his challenger traded some sharp rhetorical jabs along the way as they critiqued each other, and while the election may be over, the litigation isn't. Beck has filed a federal lawsuit against Root, accusing him of violating his constitutional rights by trying to punish him through job sanctions for daring to challenge him. Root says he is a Christian man who believes in the fundamental principle of forgiveness against those who trespass against him. "Yeah, I don't typically hold grudges on people," he said. "That's the way I am, you know. I'll get past it. Not a big deal, but it's definitely something that I won't forget. But it's also not something I'll hold against him." Beck, for his part, said he was pleasantly surprised by the effectiveness of his campaign. "I feel like I got a lot of support," he added, saying he had no regrets about making his bid for the chief's badge. In the meantime, he goes back to his job as deputy, and he said his lawsuit continues. Asked if he had a message for his supporters, he said, "I would just tell them to basically stay tuned for future deeds, future comments, and keep the support out there for me. And you know, I look to try again." As for now, the overall election turned out. The county clerk said it wasn't a huge demonstration of voter enthusiasm for the democratic process. Out of 68,624 registered voters, just 13,522 of them cast ballots for a rather anemic turnout rate of 19.70%. Well, 4 years ago it was about 23%, and I had kind of expected to at least get across the 20% barrier, said Tanner. But I guess people just weren't as excited about this election as maybe they were 4 years ago. Tanner said the voting tabulators and the election system worked well with no serious hiccups. He said the county will have all new tabulation machines in place for the November general election. "You know, the machines we have are only 10 years old," he said, "but nobody's carrying around a 10-year-old iPhone either. technology has a short shelf life. There's a correction on page A2. In Macon County, spring trout will be stocked in Cattail Pond, Rock Springs Conservation Area. The location was incorrect in the story. Spring trout fishing season opens Saturday. In the Thursday, April 2nd, Herald and Review. So again, that's spring trout will be stocked in Cattail Pond, Rock Springs Conservation Area. And I wouldn't ordinarily read this because it's just news, but since it's Easter weekend and there's candy out, I'll read this. Hershey is to return to classic Reese's recipes. This is from the Associated Press. Hershey says it will use classic recipes for all Reese's products starting next year, a change that comes after the grandson of Reese's founder criticized the company for shifting to cheaper ingredients. Reese's peanut butter cups have always been made with real milk chocolate or dark chocolate and peanut butter, but a small portion of Hershey's and Reese's products, like mini Easter eggs, are now made with a coating that contains less chocolate. Hershey said that in 2027, it will shift those products to their classic milk chocolate and dark chocolate recipes. The Hershey, Pennsylvania-based company, said it will also be making other changes to its sweet portfolio next year, including transitioning to natural colors and enhancing Kit Kat's recipe to make it creamier. The company said it plans to increase its research and development funding by 25% next year. Hershey is committed to making products consumers love, and that means continually reviewing our recipes to meet evolving tastes and preferences, the company said in a statement Wednesday. Brad Reese, the grandson of the inventor of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, ignited the controversy in a public letter he sent to Hershey's corporate brand manager on Valentine's Day. How does the Hershey Company continue to position Reese's as its flagship brand, a symbol of trust, quality, and leadership, while quietly replacing the very ingredients, milk chocolate and peanut butter, that built Reese's trust in the first place? Reese wrote in that letter, which he posted on his LinkedIn profile. Hershey acknowledged some recipe changes, but said it was trying to meet consumer demand for innovation. High cocoa prices also have led Hershey and other manufacturers to experiment with using less chocolate in recent years. The Associated Press left a message with Brad Reese on Wednesday seeking comment. Brad Reese is the grandson of H.B. Reese, who spent 2 years at Hershey before forming his own candy company in 1919. H.B. Reese invented Reese's Peanut Butter Cups in 1928. His six sons eventually sold his company to Hershey in 1963. In local news on page A3, courts, driver pleads to reckless homicide. Isaiah K. Flagg could be looking at 16 years in prison as punishment for the day he used methamphetamine, drove a car recklessly at 94 miles per hour, and plowed into two Decatur pedestrians, inflicting fatal injuries on them both. Flagg appeared Wednesday in Macon County Circuit Court and took a plea deal that saw him admit one charge of reckless homicide, a Class 3 felony. He also pleaded guilty to aggravated driving under the influence with any amount of drug, substance, or compound in his blood, a Class 4 felony. Judge Lindsay Shelton warned the 37-year-old Decatur defendant he faces from 2 to 10 years on the reckless homicide offense and a prison range of 1 to 6 years on the aggravated DUI. Legal rules allow for the sentences to be imposed consecutively, adding up to the possible maximum prison term of 16 years. Flagg is scheduled to be sentenced June 1st, and his defense lawyer, Susan Moorhead, told the judge she's ready to fight a contested sentencing hearing in an effort to spare her client the most extreme penalty. Turning to the defendant, the judge said she wanted to make sure he understood the sentencing range he was facing. The state's going to ask for the sentencing period of one charge to run into the next charge. That makes the possible maximum penalty up to 16 years. You understand all that? Flagg, who had been held in custody since the night of the crash, said he did, and he acknowledged it would be up to the judge to decide the length of sentence he received. Giving evidence at Wednesday's hearing, Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Philip Tibbs said the fatal crash happened just before 10 p.m. on August 21st in the 1500 block of West Main Street. Tibbs said Flagg, whose license was revoked, was driving his mother's Pontiac G6 car at more than 90 miles per hour in a 30-mile-per-hour zone, and witnesses described him recklessly cutting in and out of traffic before the crash. The speed of the car was later confirmed by crash investigation experts from the Decatur Police Department, who pulled data from the vehicle's computer. 4 seconds prior to the crash, the vehicle was traveling at 94 miles per hour, said Tibbs. It was not until approximately 2 seconds prior to when the first impact occurred that any pressure was taken off the accelerator and the brakes were applied. Tibbs said police and witnesses' evidence would show the car hit a curb, went airborne before hitting the two pedestrian victims. Candace N. Wilt, 38, was pronounced dead at the scene. The second pedestrian, Christopher Cox, 29, survived the impact but succumbed to his injuries later in the hospital. News of his death was relayed to Judge Shelton on August 25th while she was conducting Flagg's arraignment hearing. Tibbs said Flagg had failed field sobriety tests, and a later analysis of his blood by the state police crime lab revealed the presence of meth. Police reports from the crash also described Flagg as smelling strongly of alcohol, and his vehicle had been littered with multiple cans of various alcoholic beverages, according to a sworn affidavit. In state news, Illinois, Walton Air makes Forbes billionaires list. This is from the Belleville News Democrat. Illinois' richest resident, the 40th wealthiest person in the world, gained $10 billion in net worth from 2025 to 2026, according to a recent Forbes report. The Business Publications March 10th report, Forbes' world's billionaires list, the top 200, found it was a record year for billionaire wealth, with 989 billionaires and 3,428 billionaires globally. One Illinois resident, Lucas Walton, made the top 200. The 39-year-old is the grandson of Walmart founder Sam Walton and inherited his fortune when his father died in a plane crash, Forbes reports. Another member of the ultra-wealthy with connections to Illinois also made the list with a net worth of $15 billion, although his primary residence is in Naples, Florida. Here's what to know about the two billionaires with Illinois ties on the top 200 list, as well as how Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, Elon Musk, and others compared. Who is Illinois' richest man? Chicagoan Lucas Walton is the richest Illinois resident, the 23rd wealthiest in the nation, and the 40th richest in the world, according to Forbes. In April 2025, Walton's net worth was estimated at $38.9 billion, and the figure has shot up to $48.9 billion as of March. Since he inherited the fortune, Forbes gave him a 1 out of 10 in the self-made score category, while he received a 2 out of 5 on philanthropy, compared to a score of 1 last year. Walton has been described as fiercely private. He grew up in California, was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer at 3 years old, according to New York's magazine Intelligencer. He reportedly recovered within 5 months, and his mother attributed his recovery to dietary changes. Walton sold a Lincoln Park home in 2022 for $1.7 million, according to the Chicago Tribune. The home was sold in a private transaction and wasn't publicly listed. Walmart has 4,611 locations across the U.S. and employs about 1.6 million people in the country. Who is billionaire Shahid Khan? Florida resident Shahid Khan was named the 193rd richest person in the world by Forbes, and the NFL's Jacksonville Jaguars owner earned his industrial engineering degree from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign in 1971. Khan emigrated from Pakistan at 16 years old. Khan also owns Urbana-based automotive parts company Flexengate. While he primarily resides in Naples, Khan reportedly owns homes in Champaign and Chicago, as well as approximately 24,000 acres of farmland in central Illinois, according to reporting by Investigate Midwest. How do other billionaires compare? Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker is one of the richest politicians in office in the U.S., but he did not make the top 200 wealthiest people list. Pritzker's real-time net worth was calculated at $3.9 billion as of March 30th, and Forbes reports that he is the 1,061st wealthiest person in the world. For the second consecutive year, Elon Musk took the number one richest person in the world title with an estimated net worth of $839 billion compared to $342 billion in 2025. Larry Page, Sergey Brin, Jeff Bezos, and Mark Zuckerberg rounded out the list at the top five. The smallest net worth to make the top 200 this year was $14.5 billion. Another kind of Easter-related story is eggs cost much less than last year. U.S. egg prices fell 60% from last year's record highs, making it easier for consumers to fill their Easter baskets and Passover Seder plates. Bird flu was to blame for elevated retail prices during the first 5 months of 2025, and the course of the highly contagious disease is a big reason why prices are much lower now. An outbreak forced farmers and commercial producers to slaughter entire broods of egg-laying hens, but ebbing cases in the second half of last year helped restore egg supplies, said Mark Jordan, the executive director of agricultural research firm LEAP, Leap Market and Analytics. The stubborn outbreak is still affecting U.S. poultry flocks, with the number infected commercial flocks rising in March, but farmers are rapidly replenishing flocks that died or had to be destroyed. Between July 2024 and July 2025, the number of egg-type chicks hatched in the U.S. rose 8%. It was the first sustained and substantial increase in the availability of specially bred layer chicks since the bird flu outbreak began in 2022, Jordan said. The Trump administration's decision to import almost 1 billion eggs last year also helped lower prices, Jordan said, though imports since returned to more normal levels. The U.S. also exported fewer eggs last year to help boost domestic supplies. But what's good for consumers isn't necessarily good for farmers, who find it difficult to recoup their costs as egg prices plummet. They also may have to pay more for feed, including corn and soybean meal, because of the Iran war. Farmers are no strangers to volatility. It's part of the business, but in recent months, many have been selling eggs at or below the cost of production, said Emily Metz, the president and CEO of the America Egg Board, a trade group. Here's what a look at U.S. egg prices by the numbers, or here's a look at prices by the numbers according to government figures. $2.50 per dozen, average U.S. price for a dozen eggs in February, $623 per dozen, average U.S. price for a dozen eggs in March 2025, which was an all-time high, $315.8 million. That was the number of egg-laying hens in the U.S. as of March 1st. That's an 8% higher than last year. 45 million number of egg-laying hens in Iowa, the top U.S. state for egg production. 205.7 million. That's the number of chicks and other birds in commercial and backyard flocks that died or were culled due to bird flu since February 2022. 5.22 million number of chickens and other birds that died or were culled because of bird flu in March 2026. That is more than double the number affected in March 2025. A 657%, that's the percentage increase in U.S. imports of shell eggs in 2025 compared to the year before. $1.05 is the average cost for farmers to produce a dozen eggs, not including labor and transportation, according to the American Egg Board. In late March, the national average wholesale price for eggs was $1.17 per dozen. 40,000 is the number of real eggs that will be used for this year's White House Easter egg roll. Today in history, on this date, in 1860, the first Pony Express mail delivery rides began, one heading west from St. Joseph, Missouri, and one heading east from Sacramento, California. In 1882, outlaw Jesse James was shot and killed in St. Joseph, Missouri, by Robert Ford, a member of James's gang. In 1936, Bruno Richard Hauptmann was electrocuted in Trenton, New Jersey, for the 1932 kidnap murder of 20-month-old Charles Lindbergh, Jr. In 1968, civil rights leader Martin Luther King, Jr., delivered what was to be his final speech, telling a rally of striking sanitation workers in Memphis, Tennessee, "I've been to the mountaintop. I've been to the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we, as a people, will get to the promised land." The following day, King was killed at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis. In 1996, Theodore Kaczynski, the Harvard-educated mathematician known as the Unabomber, was arrested at a remote mountain, Montana, cabin by FBI agents from his off-the-grid location. Kaczynski waged a 17-year bombing campaign that killed 3 and injured 23. He died in prison in 2023 at age 81. And in 2009, a gunman opened fire on a room where immigrants were taking a U.S. citizen exam in Binghamton, New York, killing 13 people before taking his own life. And that's all the time we have for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, April 3rd, 2026. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.